Today's Between the Rows podcast is brought to you by our sponsor, Gowan Canada, the go-to company. Gowan's herbicide portfolio includes Avidex and Fortress, which control Group 1 and Group 2 resistant wild oats. Don't let wild oats rob your yields. Use Avidex and Fortress to stop them in their tracks. Welcome to Between the Rows, where you get to hear the stories behind the stories in Canada's leading farm publications. This week, Alexis Kinlan from Alberta Farmer Express reports on the emergence of bovine TB in Alberta.
It is possible that we could eradicate it completely from Canada if we keep up enough eradication efforts and monitor and pay attention to the disease.
Lisa Gunther of Grain News brings us a look at the potential for faba beans in Saskatchewan.
The safe bet for faba beans really is the domestic livestock feed market because faba beans do have several benefits.
And the Western producer's Darce McMillan takes a look at the markets.
It just depending on where your currency is, might mean that wheat is still a good option for you. So it's always a big issue, that currency factor.
All this on Between the Rows with this week's host, Laura Rance.
Hi, and welcome to Between the Rows, a weekly podcast by Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. Cattle ranchers in southern Alberta are learning what northwestern Manitoba farmers have known for years. Bovine tuberculosis casts a long, mean shadow, and it's incredibly hard to get out from under it. Alexis Kinlan of Alberta Farmer Express has been following the effort to trace and contain an outbreak of TB in Alberta. She turned to the people behind the eradication effort in Manitoba for some insights as to why these efforts are so important. Alexis, how big an issue do you have in Alberta with tuberculosis?
Well, I don't want to downplay the importance of having a few cases or say that they're not important. But in general, tuberculosis is not a major problem in the province. We've got some small isolated cases that have appeared around the Jenner area that appeared in September 2016. And in the past, we've had some incidents that have appeared at Wood Buffalo National Park in northern Alberta. Cattle have gotten tuberculosis from the bison that live in the park. Fortunately, that happens very rarely because there's large distances between the herd of wild bison and the domestic cattle farms in the area.
So what are they able to learn from the situation in Manitoba then?
Well, what they've learned and what they've maintained is the situation in Manitoba, the Riding Mountain, situation is quite different, but Dr. Alan Preston, who's been involved with the situation for a long time, has talked about the importance of biosecurity in the area, and just about in that area, there's a real mingling of the wildlife and the domestic cattle population, and the wildlife have served as a vector for the disease. One of the things that Dr. Preston also talked about was the importance of premise ID whenever an animal with tuberculosis is found. When they find an animal with tuberculosis and you have premise ID and good animal keeping records, they can use those records to find other animals that may have TB, or they can use that to trace back the animal and find out which herd it came from. So that's something that producers can really learn from cases where there have been TB already.
So that traceability is super important.
Yes, traceability is growing in importance and is just becoming more and more important, especially when we have disease issues or disease risks. Dr. Preston said that traceability, a robust traceability system, is also important in the case of a BSE outbreak or if we find a BSE case. A good traceability system allows investigators to find the information so much more easily and so much more quickly, which can make a difference. It is possible that we could eradicate it completely from Canada if we keep up enough eradication efforts and monitor and pay attention to the disease.
How big an issue is it globally?
Actually, globally, tuberculosis is a huge issue. It is a zoonotic disease, so people can die from tuberculosis. And I think it's about 1.5 million to 2 million people die every year from tuberculosis. About 50 million cattle worldwide do have tuberculosis, and so the global economic losses that result from this disease are really high. It's quite a serious disease, and it can cost a lot. In other parts of the world, cattle can also die from this disease. It can manifest as a production-limiting disease, and animals can lose weight and show loss of appetite as well. Milk production in dairy cattle can also go down as a result of tuberculosis.
So there's a real concern there as far as keeping this contained in Canada.
Yes. Part of the other reason why it's important to keep it contained and just eradicate it in Canada is that Canada does enjoy TB-free status. And that means that we have a very, very low incidence of TB. It doesn't mean that we have to have 100% negative TB, but we have very, very, very few cases. And that gives us a trading status around the world and one that markets are tied to that status.
Well, thanks for bringing us this story, Alexis.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Alexis Kinlan writes for Alberta Farmer Express. She's based in Edmonton. For more information, you can check out her stories in that paper's latest edition. You're listening to Between the Rows. Doris McMillan from the Western Producer will be joining us in a few minutes to talk about this week's markets. But first, Lisa Gunther from Grain News joins us to talk about an old crop that's gaining some new ground in Western Canada. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Laura.
You know, farmers on the eastern prairies tried growing faba beans in the 1960s, but they didn't really take off because they took such a long time to mature and they didn't fare that well in wet soil conditions. What's been happening to rekindle interest in Saskatchewan?
Well, so I think the growing interest in faba beans here is at least partially driven by aphanomyces root rot. Aphanomyces has taken its toll on other pulses such as peas and lentils in the last few years. Faba beans do have better resistance to aphanomyces, and they actually tolerate wet feet better than peas. They also have good standability, which is a bonus for anyone who hates picking rocks out of their combine. So just given some of the weather conditions and disease problems we've seen in Saskatchewan in the last few years, the growing interest in faba beans does make sense.
What kind of role do they play in the farmer's rotation?
Like other pulses, they fix nitrogen. In fact, they fix more nitrogen than other annual legumes, so that's a big bonus. There's also varieties today that are well-suited to livestock, so that makes them an attractive option to mixed farmers or farmers selling to livestock operations. And there's also varieties well-suited for the human food market as well.
So what kind of acres are being grown today, and what potential do they see?
So according to the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN, Canada produced 92,000 metric tons in 2016, which was actually down from 139,000 tons the year before. The growth has been pretty big in the last few years. So if you look to 2009, you had just over 5,000 tons grown in Canada. Then we saw a jump to over 22,000 tons in 2013, and then another big jump to over 107,000 tons in 2014. I don't have a crystal ball, but I think future growth in Canada will depend partly on market development, along with continuing variety development and agronomics.
You mentioned there were some different varieties with different uses. Have the varieties changed in other ways?
Yeah, there are newer varieties, and plant breeders are working on more varieties. So you mentioned maturity earlier, and farmers can get earlier maturing varieties today. But according to Fast Pulse, we're still talking over 100 days to reach maturity. The good thing about fava beans, though, is that they tolerate frost and low seeding temperatures quite well, so you can seed them quite early. The other big thing is growers can choose between high tannin or zero tannin varieties. So the high tannin varieties bring a higher price because they're destined for the human food market, but they can't be fed to livestock, so if they don't make the grade, you've got a problem. The zero tannin varieties command a lower price as they aren't really as prized for human consumption, although they can be sold into the food market. But farmers can sell them as livestock feed, and they also tend to have smaller seed sizes, which makes them easier to plant.
So is growing fava beans an export play for prairie farmers?
There are Canadian companies exporting fava beans right now, but whether or not those export markets would take a bigger volume of Canadian fava beans is another question. So SaskPulse commissioned Joe Feiertag, an economist with LMC International, to study the market potential for fava beans, and he presented his findings during CropSphere in Saskatoon this winter. He said that fava bean production has kept pace with demand in most countries, so that really only leaves Egypt as the major importer of fava beans. And Australia, the UK, and France dominate the Egyptian fava bean market already.
And that's really the challenge. I mean, this wouldn't just be a recommendation to Canadian fava bean growers, this would be a recommendation to any fava bean growers. Is if there is an export market that's concentrated on one single country, especially a country as politically unstable as Egypt, that's probably a bad way to set up your industry, because you're really putting dependency on one single country, and that's a big risk factor, and that's the challenge for exports.
Feiertag doesn't see huge opportunity in other global markets going forward either. Egypt will account for most of the future fava bean market growth, he says, with the exception of small export markets in Morocco and Ethiopia.
So it's sounding like their best bet then is to be developing markets closer to home. Do fava beans have advantages over the other pulses as far as a source of protein?
Yeah, Feiertag said there are potential opportunities in the domestic food market, although work needs to be done to figure out the right fit there. But the safe bet for fava beans really is the domestic livestock feed market, he said, because fava beans do have several benefits.
And that's really where we see the opportunities. The feed market, it really has, like, it's just full of pluses, really. It's already used by hog and poultry farmers, and feed millers buy it when it's at a discount to peas. And lysine isn't an issue, unlike it is for the food sector. And it's got, like I said, a good amino acid profile with high lysine, higher protein content than peas despite being priced less than it. And it's a local supply, so if you're going to use it in Alberta and Saskatchewan, then you would cut down on the transportation costs of importing soybean meal from neighboring states in the US or you know, transporting it over from Manitoba. And you also avoid the problems with foreign currency risk. Obviously, Canadians have been affected by falling currency against the US dollar, so why import soybean when you can grow it farm beans locally?
The hog and poultry market in Alberta and Saskatchewan could take between 220,000 and 500,000 tons of fava beans, depending on how optimistic you are, he says. The Atlantic salmon feed market could also take up to 113,000 tons of raw material, which would then be turned into protein concentrate. And the beef market, we're looking at 7 to 9 million tons, according to Feiertag.
That's potentially a lot of acres, and I mean, as you say, it's a good rotation option, so it looks like that this crop could be here to stay this time.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it's always good for farmers to have another option in their rotation, I think.
Well, thanks for bringing us this story, Lisa.
Thanks, Laura.
Lisa Gunther writes for Grain News from her home at Livelon, Saskatchewan. Her story appears in the March 23rd issue. You're listening to Between the Rows, brought to you by Glacier Farm Media. I'm your host this week, Laura Rance. Next up, we have Darce McMillan from The Western Producer, who's going to bring us the latest developments in the markets. Hi, Darce.
Hi, Laura. Good to be here.
Yeah, so the snow's just about gone, and we've got some spring weather coming. You know, we know that everybody's talking about the spring seeding plans, and we also know that the U.S. gets into the field before we do. So what are we hearing about what's going on in the U.S. right now?
Yeah, well, of course, Canadian farmers like to know what's happening in with the seeding plans in the U.S. because that does affect crop prices everywhere. And there is a big USDA planting intentions report survey that comes out on March the 31st. So I really recommend to our listeners that they turn to the websites of Glacier Farm Media, the agcanada.com site or the Western Producers site, and they'll have some information on March 31st when that report comes out. But generally speaking, the idea is that American farmers will probably boost their soybean area to a record high, and in order to make room for those extra soybeans, we'll see less corn and less wheat acreage.
So with the Americans cutting back on wheat acreage, how much effect do you see that happening on prices?
Yeah, well, wheat's certainly been struggling, hasn't it? And we need less wheat in the world to try to reduce the stockpiles that we've got here, and every little bit helps. There'll also probably be less wheat seeded here in Canada as well. But the International Grains Council, it's a body that puts out forecasts on a regular basis, similar to what the USDA does. It expects that the global wheat production will be down only about 2% in the coming crop year, the 2017-18 year. And even though that there's less seeded acreage probably here in North America, we're probably going to have more production in Europe this year. France had a drought last year that cut European production. And even though the price has been kind of miserable here because of the currency issues, things didn't look so bad last fall for Russia and for Ukraine, and so their acreages did not go down. They might not have this. Russia last year had a really spectacular yields, and so they might not. You know, they might go back to a more normal yield, but still, there's going to be quite a bit of wheat coming out of that Black Sea region. But nevertheless, if we do get a 2% decrease in the size of the international crop, that means that demand will likely exceed the supply, and so that means that ending stocks will be trimmed a little bit, but they'll still remain pretty high. And so we'll need at least a couple of years of reduced global production to bring these stocks back to a more manageable level. Either that, or we're going to need a major weather problem somewhere that really damages production in one of the major wheat producers of the world. And so far, there doesn't seem to be a really big weather threat facing any of these regions like the Black Sea or here in North America or Europe, anywhere in the northern hemisphere where we're about to either that winter crop is either coming out of dormancy or else we're going to be seeding the spring crop. One concern that there was out there was some dry weather in the U.S. winter wheat area, but just recently they got some pretty good rain, so that concern is sort of being washed away, as it were.
So is it fair to say that, you know, if you're going to make money on wheat this year, it's going to be a function of currency fluctuations as opposed to production?
Well, yeah, that has been the case this past year, although, you know, wheat prices haven't been great here in Canada, but the fact that our dollar has been weak compared to the American dollar, our wheat profitability, I should say, doesn't look as bad as it does in the United States. It really looks terrible there. And then if you're a producer, like in Ukraine or something like that, which has an even weaker currency, well, then wheat profitability there looks better than it does even here in Canada. So that's the reason why we haven't. You would think that just looking at the price of wheat that everybody would be looking for alternative crops that would turn a better profit. But just depending on where your currency is, might mean that wheat is still a good option for you. So it's always a big issue, that currency factor.
So that's the situation for wheat. What's happening in canola?
Well, its price, too, has been under pressure in the last little while, and it did fall. The old crop, May, did fall below $500 a ton, so did November, the new crop. And as it fell, it triggered sort of some technical support levels, so that even pushed it down even harder. I was kind of surprised by how much it has fallen recently, although just in the last few days, it seems to be bouncing back a little bit. Of course, one of the reasons for this pressure on canola and on all the oil seeds is that there's a record large South American soybean crop that is being harvested. I think the Brazilian crop now is more than 50% harvested already. And also this expectation of U.S. Record large soybean acreage has also been negative for oilseed prices. I guess one thing that you could say is that as canola falls, the price falls, it makes it more attractive for buyers. Mm-hmm. And certainly we have seen that the profitability for crushing has improved in the last recent couple of weeks here. And the industry here is working at just about a capacity level. I think the last number I saw was somewhere around more than 97%. And indeed, in the week to March 22nd, crushers set a one-week all-time record of just over 208,000 tons that were crushed.
They're having one wild run this year, those crushers.
Yeah, I think it's up. The crush this year, of course, is at a record. It was a record last year, and it's a record this year. And I think it's up more than 13% over last year.
They're still crushing some of that out-of-condition canola.
Yeah, and also, of course, we've got the we got a bit of a harvest going on here, or will be very soon, if not already, here, of some of the stuff that was not harvested last fall. It'll be curious to see just how the weather cooperates and what kind of quality we've got out there in the field and how much of it gets harvested and how much of it might get burned. Hopefully not too much. That's still an open question.
Spring harvest has kind of a nice ring to it, doesn't it? So what's been happening in the pulse market? It's been going through some unusual conditions as well.
Yeah, and again, I'm going to have to direct our listeners to the websites, eggcanada.com and the other ones of the Glacier Farm Media's for the latest news and all this, because several issues are kind of coming to a head on that. And once again, on March the 31st, the fumigation issue, we've talked about that a few times in this podcast. Certainly the industry here believes that there will be an extension that will allow shippers to arrange to have the cargoes fumigated in India, carrying on a situation that has been common for all time. This will be allow the trade go on, but there's an idea that it won't be a year-long extension, that it might be only a few months, and there's still a lot of question out there what will replace that regime. This methyl bromide, everybody seems to want to move away from it because it is a danger to the ozone layer, and so they're looking at some other types of fumigants, and also they're looking or just situations like here in Canada, we would like the Indians to accept our inspection. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency would inspect cargoes for the pests that India wants to ensure that they don't accidentally import with cargoes of grain. And it would be kind of our guarantee that the pests, these nematodes, are not there. And so it would be kind of a paperwork kind of a thing rather than having a requirement for a fumigation. But that's still all up in the air. We don't know exactly what's going to pan out there. Another thing that's been talked about quite a bit is the possibility that India might impose some new import duties on imported grains. They have this. Right. They've had a good luck with last year's monsoon and the crop that was seeded in the fall and is being harvested now. They got a great wheat crop and a great pulse crop there, and so because the large production, the prices in India are falling, and so they don't want necessarily to have some imports coming in at the same time that will compete with their own crops and lower prices. So they're looking around for ways to try to limit the supply that's there. And so an import duty might be imposed. And in fact, indeed, just this morning, I'm reading that they have brought in a 10% import duty on wheat and on pigeon peas. We don't ship a lot of wheat there, so the 10% import duty isn't a big deal, really, for Canada. And we're looking at the implications of this thing on the pigeon peas issue. And at first blush, anyways, we believe that this import duty won't apply to the peas and the lentils that Canada exports to India. So it might be a factor of some of, there are other countries that do export pulse crops to India, and so that might be a bigger issue for them than for Canada.
So people are going to want to be watching pretty closely over the next couple of weeks to see how these
things pan out. Yeah, it's one of the great things about having websites is that you can get the news out right away. And so I always highly recommend that farmers tune into the, they can get instant information these days from the websites, the westernproducer.com and canada.com and all their favorite publications from the Glacier Farm Media.
Well, thanks for being with us today, Darce.
You bet.
We'll talk
to
you soon.
Nice to talk to you.
Well, that's all we have for you today, but we'll be back again next week with more on Between the Rows. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host this week, Laura Rantz.
We'd like to thank Gowan Canada, our sponsor for today's Between the Rows podcast. Remember, if you have Group 1 or 2 resistant wild oats on your farm, use Avidex or Fortress to control them. Between the Rows is a production of Glacier Farm Media, Canada's leading farm publisher. We'd love to hear what you think of the show and invite you to send your comments to btr@farmmedia.com or visit us at membersgetmore.ca. And sign up today.